A man born and raised in Waukesha. He did his first hunting and fishing right here. Now he hunts the world and cooks it up deliciously, featured as the Midwestern host of The Fowl Life on the Outdoor Channel. Joel Clayfish was raised in the Shaw.
A couple extra pounds never really hurt, 'cause a country boy is all I'll ever be.
You know, I gotta admit, it's pretty cool to have that Aaron Lewis song as the intro to the show. Especially because I think the line in there, a couple extra pounds never really hurt. But I'm not sure if a couple extra pounds actually hurt or not. I think I'd like to think a couple extra pounds don't really hurt, but I'm still working on it. I'm working on it, all right? But I do get my blood pressure raised when I'm in the waters and woods of the great state of Wisconsin. And, of course, that is a big part of what our show is. Welcome to the show, Raised in the Shaw, with me, Joel Clayfish, on 101 FM, 540 AM, WAUK, The Shaw, coming to you from the Fishbowl in downtown Waukesha. You can swing by anytime during our live shows on Thursday evening at 7 o'clock and say, hey, poke in. You'll be able to see us right through the window from 217 Wisconsin Avenue. And what a fantastic show we have lined up for today. I want to introduce not only a good friend of mine, but a very conscientious member of society. Mario Herrera joins me today, and Mario's got an extremely extensive past in the outdoor firearm industry. Mario, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here today.
I'm excited to be here, Joel.
So you were, and first off, let me say thank you for your service.
Thank you.
You are a Marine, and as they say, once a Marine, always a Marine. Semper Fidelis, right? Always faithful.
Semper Fi. If you didn't know I was a Marine, every Marine always lets everyone know that they are Marines. So you're going to hear it at one point or another. So thank you for being the introduction for that.
Yes, and one of the nicknames for Marines is Devil Dogs. Do you know why?
Tufelhunden. During World War II, the German soldiers were so afraid of the Marines, they referred to us as Tufelhunden. And
Tufelhunden.
Yeah, and I think they had Google Translate back then, or I'm not sure how they figured it out.
Probably not.
But, you know, the Marines would eventually call each other Tufelhunden. Like, well, what does that mean? It means devil dog. So they were so destructive during World War II to the Germans that the Germans coined us devil dog. And you know what? We leaned into it and we accepted that name. So we are now devil dogs.
Ah, yes. It's very common in life for people to... Nicknames have always fascinated me because I love giving people nicknames, but nicknames don't very often stick. But what's really funny is when you do give somebody a nickname that they end up embracing. And it always cracks me up when there's like a 7 foot tall guy whose nickname is Tiny. But very often it takes a while for a nickname to stick. Do you have any nicknames?
You know, I don't. But it's not that abnormal because especially for your listeners who may not be able to see me. I am of Mexican descent. And so, well, I figure I'm about to explain something that your listeners might need some context for. But we give each other the worst nicknames. Have you ever noticed why Mexican kids aren't really bothered when they're picked on? Because your families pick on you more than anything. So, you know, if you're a heavy set, they call you Flaco, which means skinny. If you're skinny, they call you gordo, which means fat. I was, as a kid, cabezón because I had a big head, but I grew into it, so I'm no longer cabezón.
Well, you know, you and I, our history goes back into from very many different things, but one of our early histories was that you came to me and said, Joel, can you take me hunting? And a lot of stories... on this show, and a lot of what this show is about is getting new people into the sport. Now, this wasn't getting you into hunting. You had a hunting pass, but then you went through an era that you didn't hunt for a while. So take me through that. Why? What type of hunting did you do? Why did you leave it, and why did you come back to it?
So in the Marine Corps, I was stationed in North Carolina for several years, and I was this lone little Mexican kid with a... you know, with a group of rednecks that all they did was hunt and they brought me along and I fell in love with it. There's something about being able to, you know, take your meal from the field all the way to your kitchen table. And by the way, I make traditional Mexican dishes almost every day from things that I kill. There is nothing to me that is more rewarding than being able to harvest and eat your own food. And especially when you implement your own culture. Somebody coined it and I stole it from them, so this is now my term, but they called it Midwestican food, because I'm taking hunting, I'm taking my culture, I'm bringing that all together. But I learned this in the Marine Corps from a bunch of rednecks that just took me out with them. And then I moved back to California, where I'm originally from, and there wasn't much hunting there. Now, when I moved to Wisconsin, the number one thing I was excited about was getting into hunting again, but none of my friends hunted. And I remember when you were still in the legislature, somebody invited me to a little cookout that you had in your office, and you didn't know who I was. But, I remember telling you, like, man, this is so great. I want you to take me hunting one day. You're like, yeah. And you're like, oh, this is a random guy that just showed up to my office. Probably will never see him again. And then one afternoon, I don't know if you remember this, Joel, I'm coming from California, and now I could finally buy guns that aren't California regulated. I go to Midwest Industries, and then you walk in. It's the middle of the workday, so neither of us should have been there.
It was a lunch hour, I'm sure.
I'm like, don't tell my boss I'm here. And you're like, don't tell the family I'm here. I'm like, okay. But then I followed up. I want to go hunting, and I wanted to bring that back. And there's such a strong hunting culture here in Wisconsin. Joel was the first one to take me out. We went out on his property, and we didn't shoot a damn thing. And apparently, according to Joel, that was the first time he didn't get anything.
We
that year.
Saw deer, though. We did see we deer. We did see deer. That is a successful. Well, we laughed, and we were probably too loud, frankly.
Oh, that was evidently the case.
But we did see. We definitely did see deer on that evening. But what I noticed in you, and I noticed this in so many people, when very often people will approach me, they know how involved I am in the hunting industry. And when I say the hunting industry, I'm talking about the industry of people who are, in essence, a brother and sisterhood of people who enjoy being in Wisconsin's great outdoors and spending time in the outdoors. And the harvest is certainly a large part of that, and bringing it to the table is a large part of it. But also a large part of it is just getting out there and experiencing the fresh air, the daylight, the mornings, the sunsets.
Oh, yeah. So, and I'm actually going to include some of my own experiences with my military background and dive in a little deeper. So I found a group called Hunt for Hero or Hero Hunt. They're based out of Wisconsin, and they always have, they have this big hunt up in Washington County, which for those of you that don't know where Washington County is, you go to the very tip of Door County, you take a ferry to one of the islands where it's basically Canada, and they're huge. And they're overpopulated with deer because, there's not a lot of people that live there. So that's where we went. And every year they did, they do three new veterans, and I got to go one year. But now I was so involved with the program that now I'm a part of the host committee. So now I bring veterans in every year, and I teach them how to hunt, just like you taught me how to hunt. And now I'm teaching other veterans how to hunt. But you include the whole, the whole experience, being up in the morning, experiencing nature, experiencing the sunset. And then you include the camaraderie that many veterans haven't seen or haven't had since they left the military. And it's like we never got out. People that have never met just show up to an island. It's kind of like Hunger Games. The first time you're kind of afraid, like, where am I being invited? But once you get there, it's so cool. And then, it's almost as if you guys have known each other for years because of that military camaraderie. So there's so much to hunting and so much bonding that you can have with people that you've never met just through hunting and through food and through exchanging or sharing your culture And it is just a beautiful thing.
Let's hang for a minute on talking about veterans. You know, veterans who do serve in the military and end up in a wartime situation, which you have, and come back. And you hear stories, and frankly, movies are made of it. Epic tales are told of it. But in all reality, for many of the veterans who come back, it is an incredibly tough transition, isn't it?
It is.
And is hunting something that can be or is proven to be a therapeutic answer in some cases?
Well, this doesn't just apply to veterans. I mean, how often are you just in the middle of the woods? There's no one around you. You know, you've got no reception, so your cell phone's not even a distraction. And you are just one with nature. And it is just such a peaceful experience. But then you implement the veteran portion of it. And one of the reasons why it's so difficult for veterans to transition into society is because we are so bad and we are so tough, Joel. We get out of the military and you hear about all these cases where veterans are taking their lives. Well, that's never going to happen to me. Those are for the sissy veterans. But you have an entire structure that you've depended on for the entire timeline of your enlistment, and now you're alone, and now you're this big tough guy that nothing will ever bother you, and you have everything taken away from you, and it's hard for us to cope. And we don't tell people because we want you to think that we're these big tough veterans, but in reality, we don't know how to handle ourselves. So when you start taking these veterans, bringing them together in an environment that gives so much back to them as far as the hunting experience, it just completely brings life into them. And it is one of my favorite things to do every year. I don't take much vacation time from work. I'll take 2 weeks off every deer hunting season for this occasion because it is that powerful of a hunting trip.
So many times, you know, veterans come back, and I was not blessed with the fortune of being a veteran of this country, so that makes me somewhat.
The red, the white, the blue.
And salutes veterans.
The other one's so got a rattlesnake with a simple statement made. Don't tread on me, is what it says, and I'll take that to my grave.
I'll be careful.
This is me. I'm proud to be American and strong in my belief.
Actually, I'm going to use this as an opportunity for my students. But,
and I've said it before, but I'll say it again. Because I've never needed government to hold my hand. And I've said it before, but I'll say it again. Because my family's always fought and died to save this land and a country boy.
That's great. When we come back, Mario Herrera, veteran, hunter, food preparer, also considered a class teacher.
I love my country. I love my guns. I love my family. I love the way it is now. And anybody that tries to change it has to come through me. That should be all of our attitudes. This is America. And a country boy's good enough for me, son.
I mixed up on the cues there for a second, but that's fine.